Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Judge Connolly, Judge Hooten, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. We have six cases on our calendar, four of which are set for oral argument. This is the first of the four cases for oral argument. This is A23-0762, State of Minnesota versus Saladin K. Nakale. And my apologies if I mispronounce that, counsel. Feel free to correct my pronunciation when you begin. We are holding this via Zoom, so we are having it virtually, and we will be recording this. No other recordings, however, are permitted. All other rules of court stand, other than don't worry about having to stand. There's no podium you have to stand in front of, obviously. We will be having 15 minutes for appellant's arguments, followed by 15 minutes for respondent, and then 5 minutes for appellant for rebuttal, if you so choose. There is a screen with a timer. Please be cognizant of that to note how much time you have left remaining for your oral arguments. We have today a panel of myself, presiding judge, Judge Carol Hooten, and Judge Frank Connolly. At this time, Judge Connolly has been detained. He will be joining us as soon as he can, but we will be going ahead with oral argument. If he is not able to participate until after the oral arguments, he will still have the opportunity to listen to the oral arguments that are being recorded orally. So, with that, counsel for appellant, if you can state your name for the record and the party you are representing, you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Rod Cheetah, and I represent Mr. Nakale in this appeal. And I think your pronunciation was excellent. Thank you, Your Honor. So as we can see from the citation in this case, that was the charging instrument, the appellant was cited for a speed 47 in what was alleged to be a 30 mile an hour zone. That was under Minnesota Statute 169.14, Subdivision 2, Parent A and Parent 1, which is, of course, the 30 miles per hour in an urban district. And I think the parties agree, urban district is specifically defined by statute. And of course, it speaks to the state having to show or prove that the measured distances between certain structures on the roadway were within 100 feet of one another for at least a quarter mile or more. And with respect to this particular charge, we saw no evidence from the state during the court trial. We saw no argument from the state, no evidence. And at the end of that proceeding, Mr. Nakley was convicted. And the state is taking the opinion at this time that the element of urban district may be excised from the charge that they chose to prosecute. And there's
Are you essentially just claiming the state brought the wrong charge and didn't prove up the charge that they brought? Is
well,
that your claim?
it's part of the claim, but I've asked myself, what would the perfect prosecution in this case have looked like? I still don't know. I feel like I know the case very well, but what is this a technicality? I would say no, because we don't know what the proper charging provision would have been. Would it have been subdivision 5B, which is certainly a chargeable offense having to do with urban district? But we don't know because there's nothing in the record, much like the published case of Manley that's cited in our briefs. There's nothing to indicate that this was that who placed these signs, under what authority were they placed. And so that's really a trial for a different day. But with
If there had been a charge brought on a posted speed limit, you would agree that there would have been sufficient information in this in the record to support the court's determination that would have been illegal.
Had, for example, the state charged a 5B offense dealing with urban district, and again, I don't know that that would have been the proper provision. It could have been subdivision 5A, for example, which wouldn't require an urban district, but would allow a local authority to pursue getting signs posted in their area. But what the important part for this appeal is, there would have been absolutely a presumption that the sign would have been affected, and any speed over that limit would have proved the case. And that, but we would have had not an insurmountable burden, but we would have, as the defense, had a high burden to show that somehow that sign placement was improper and done not in accordance with the statute that gave the zoning area that recipe to have those signs and make those signs effective. So I can't say that on the basis of the evidence here, because the defense had no obligation to come forward with evidence about why that signage wasn't set up in accordance with the law. And that's set forth very well in the Manley decision, where it was a subdivision 5 amendment, right? We had the same charge, subdivision 2A1, urban district, and the state amended during trial to charge a subdivision 5 offense. And the court said, well, there you go. That would have been a nice thing for the defendant, right, to know in advance, because it changed what their obligations were. And so there was prejudice to the defense. And of course, the conviction was reversed as a result. And so we're precisely in the same boat here. Again, I don't know if it would have been a subdivision 5 prosecution or a subdivision 5B prosecution as a perfect prosecution. I just don't know that sitting here today. But we are arguing that the provision that was charged was not met. We cannot excise urban district from the prosecution of this matter. And the state had, you know, they had that key to be able to turn, to charge a subdivision 5 offense, to shift that burden and to show that their signs actually would have carried the day, at least as a presumptive matter, but they did not.
How do you respond to the state's argument that this is an undue burden to prove up an urban district when it's clear that that if you know if signs had been posted that they would it would have been 30 miles an hour? I mean, how do you respond that this proving up an urban district is an undue burden?
I don't really think it's an undue burden.
I think they were, just to clarify, they were arguing that in the context that this is not what the legislature intended.
Right. Well, the argument from the state is that, you know, I think the state argued that a plain language is the argument here, but the plain language certainly isn't being honored here. The conviction that occurred here ignored the urban district element. The state ignored that evidence. They didn't make the argument, and the court sort of stepped over the urban district element. So whether it's hard to prove or not, I don't think matters. But do I think it's an undue burden? Absolutely not. The defense would have had a much, much higher burden had they charged one of those presumptive offenses in subdivision 5. But urban district, I was ready. I've been in the situation before. I've been ready to show and have folks testify about urban district in the past. I don't think it's a difficult thing, especially with the technology that we have today. There's been attempts to prove that by the state in the past. We've cited some cases in that respect. You know, an aerial photograph, satellite view might even be sufficient in the right case, but it could be testimony, it could be other evidence. But I certainly don't think that we can't get to the bottom of whether it's an urban district with the normal tools that we have in these cases. So, and you know, the important part here is that subdivision 2 and subdivision 5 are plainly different offenses. And we know that from Manley, which, you know, goes back to 1984, but we can see it in the statute. If we look at subdivision 2D, it says that a person who violates a speed limit established in this subdivision, meaning subdivision 2, or a speed limit designated on an appropriate sign under, and they include subdivision 5B. So they're separate offenses, and the state, again, has the key, has the choice, and I would say needs to do the legwork to understand what it is they're prosecuting. And do I know that the police officer made a mistake here or that the prosecutor made a mistake? I don't know. I don't know what the precise, the perfect charge would have been in this case, because I don't know why the sign was there. And that's the point of the Manley decision, is that there was nothing in the record in Manley as to who put the signs there, who pursued that, where the authority came from, and we're in the same boat in this case. So I do not look at it as being a technicality to any extent. The state needs to charge the provision and each element of the offense.
Counsel, you'd mentioned that the state is arguing that the plain language of the statute controls. Is that your position as well, that we should, because this is an issue of statutory interpretation. Do you think that the statute is plain and clear, or is it ambiguous?
No, it's absolutely plain and clear. So we're arguing that the state can't ignore the two elements there. One is to show someone's traveling over 30 miles an hour, and the other one is, of course, to show that it's an urban district. So we have two elements here. The ambiguity would come in, I guess, perhaps if we didn't have a definition for urban district, but we have one. That would create a potential ambiguity. What is an urban district? But we know what it is. So no, this is clearly plain language interpretation. The state argues the plain language, and at the same time, they sort of argue that, well, the sign matters somewhere in the penumbra of the statute. We don't need to look to the penumbra of the statute. The signs matter if you're charging a subdivision 5 offense. There's no material difference between the subdivision 5 that was the subject of the Manley decision and the subdivision 5B offense. They read the same way. One involves local areas. The other one, yes, involves urban districts. But they both say that when you want to pursue getting signs and you get signs and someone's driving higher than what the sign says, that's an offense, that the signs have effectivity. But there's nothing in the charge here that says that a sign replaces the state's need to prove urban district. And again, off the record, I don't think it was an urban district. But even on the record, I think the officer testified that there was no end sign. We would expect to see a beginning and an end sign in an urban district. We had a beginning sign, but we didn't have an end sign. I have some of these in the area where I live. It says beginning and it says end. And I assume those are urban districts. They could be rural residential districts, but it's really beside the point. I think it just goes to the fact that we just don't know what would have been the perfect charge here. But this was a very imperfect charge, at least based on the evidence that the state submitted. And of course, Manley, the state cites 169.06, stating that, you know, folks have to comply with traffic control devices. But that was discussed in Manley as well. And Manley, the Manley court in 1984 said that based on 169.06, that's how we know that there's a presumption that shifts to the defendant when you charge a subdivision 5 offense. But the Manley court also said there's no presumption in subdivision 2. And of course, this is there's no presumption with regard to 30 miles per hour in an urban district. So the state had to prove those two elements and do so beyond a reasonable doubt. And no evidence does not meet any standard. Doesn't meet reasonable suspicion, probable cause, clear and convincing evidence, certainly not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The state cites a couple of cases in its brief where the issues just weren't undertaken. The Wood case was a probable cause challenge. Doesn't appear to me that Mr. Wood argued anything about urban district. Wasn't the Court of Appeals job to sua sponte look into whether it was an urban district. It was a probable cause challenge, which is not at all similar. I don't think the state's evidence in this case would have met a probable cause threshold, but I don't know why Mr. Wood didn't argue that in that case. I know he was pro se. And the other case is the Bogren case cited by the state. There was some challenge to the radar specifically. I don't doubt that folks have been convicted under this statute without proof of an urban district. But there is nothing in the statutory scheme here that allows the state to dispense with having to prove that element.
Counsel, you reference a number of different cases, and in your brief, you reference a couple of cases from different states which are not binding on this court, but certainly can be cited for persuasive value. Are you aware of any case in Minnesota, any binding precedential case that has addressed this issue?
I would say that the civil case, for purposes of what a plaintiff is required to prove, I'm not sure it matters whether it's civil or criminal. So the Thoen case was the Supreme Court case from 1973, 296 Minnesota 252, Thoen, Thoen versus Lanesboro. And the state in this case posits why they didn't discuss the sign in Thoen, which dealt with whether or not the plaintiff had enough evidence to get an instruction on the violation of the statute, right? And the reason there's no signage discussion in Thoen is because it doesn't matter. The sign doesn't matter. When you charge or you're pursuing, proving an allegation under 2A1, 30 miles in an urban district, you better be prepared to show evidence on urban district. So yes, we do have published decision. It's a civil case, but it's a criminal case, certainly wouldn't be more relaxed than Thoen, but it's a good case and illustrates why the signage is not relevant. I'm sorry, I went over my time. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, counsel, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. Please be mindful of the clock, and you may begin by stating your name and the party you are representing.
I am Taylor McGowan, Martin County Attorney, on behalf of the state of Minnesota, and may it please the court. The state has, I think, presented a statutory interpretation argument in its brief, which is what this case is about. Is you know whether that reference to urban district and subdivision 2A1 is an indispensable element of the offense. And
do you believe there's an ambiguity in the plain, or is this plain language in the statute?
I think there is. I think if you look at the context of the entire statute, any potential ambiguity is resolved. By the other references in other subdivisions to basically the enforceability of posted speed limits, I think that highlights that in subdivision two, the references to urban district, interstate highway, et cetera, are simply denoting where these speed limits, what these speed limits will be at these locations. It's not establishing that they are an element of the offense that must be proven.
I'm a little confused by that statement, counsel, because it appears, well, first of all, I think you primarily argued that the plain language of the statute controls, and Pallant obviously is arguing that as well. But it just said it refers to it shall be unlawful in subdivision one, 30 miles per hour in an urban district.
Yes, that's simply denoting what the legislature has identified as the speed limit in that location, which I think the statute further clarifies in other subdivisions is going to be communicated to drivers and enforceable based on the sign postings.
But there's nothing in that subdivision 2A1 that references the posted speed limits. In fact, it's conspicuously absent from that subdivision.
It is. And in that sense, if that does create an ambiguity, then I think we have to then pour into,
Well,
in this.
how does that create an ambiguity, though?
In the sense that I elsewhere in the statute, I think the legislature does indicate that that posted speed limits are what's enforceable. For example, subdivision 5B, in which basically a locality is expanding an urban district, basically says that if a locality does and by resolution expand or declare that an area is an urban district consistent with statute, the speed limit is not enforceable until the signage goes up. So if the in that sense, if an area is an urban district meets the definition, why under Mr. Cheetah's reading, why would you even need to signage? Then it would just simply fall into subdivision 2A1. But the legislature, I think, is indicating that, is 169.14 a super well-drafted statute? I think there are areas where it could be clarified, certainly. But I think when you read it as a whole, there are multiple indications that the intention was that speed limits would be communicated by posted signs,
But
and
aren't
that.
you in effect with your interpretation writing out the words in urban district?
No, because I think the sign posted sign speed limit at that location is going to be consistent with the statute.
What if the posted speed, what if there's a posted speed limit sign there that says 50 miles an hour?
Then I think there's a challenge, but it should be made to the roadway authority.
But wouldn't your reading of it seems like you're reading in language that is not there. And if that's the case, and the signage is different than what the statute says, what is the driver supposed to know? What is the speed limit that is controlling? Is it the speed limit that's cited in the statute, or is it the one that's posted?
Well, I would argue that drivers should be obeying whatever signs they see on the roadway.
So if it says 50 miles an hour, then they can drive 50 miles an hour and the statute has no effect then?
No, what I would say is, if it seeks to be, and well, number one, I think too, and this is where we get in kind of manly, is there's, I think de dependent on whether the signage is consistent with the area, or the presumptive area where this statutory speed limit applies, kind of affects what the challenge is. For example, in Manly, that was an area where the defendant was charged with speeding in an urban district with a where the sign was posted as 40 miles an hour. And so the state moved to amend the charge after trial to subdivision 5 posted speed limit, and of course the court did not allow that. And the court mentioned that, well, there's no presumption under the original charge. And I think that's true because, in that case, if the state wanted to enforce subdivision 2, they would need to prove that that area was an urban district and a 30 mile an hour speed limit did apply. However, in a case where the posted speed limit is consistent with the area under the statute, I think the presumption is that the signage is appropriate, and the challenge would be on the defendant's part to argue that it was improperly placed there.
The first part of your argument seems to support. I may be confused here, but the first part of your argument seems to support appellant's argument that the plain language of the statute does require proof of really two elements: that the person was driving over 30 miles an hour, and that the person was driving in an urban district.
But
The second part of your argument seems to want to incorporate language that is not there. And when we're applying the plain language of a statute, we cannot put into the statute words that the legislature intentionally omitted. If they wanted to have it be can have it either be what's there or what's the posted speed limit, the legislature certainly could have added that language, but they didn't have it in subdivision 2A1.
But again, I think when you look at the entirety of the statute, if you're going to tie yourself to the need to prove, let's say, for example, urban district, I think that creates an inconsistency with 5B. I think the thing is the
area. I'm not sure that's necessarily inconsistent, though. I mean, because I think the two can be read separately. And I mean, there was no charge under subdivision 5. It was only subdivision 2.
Oh, I'm well aware. But I guess
I have a question for you, counsel. I usually don't like to have hypotheticals, but this one seems apropos. Let's assume that rather than the statute saying where no special hazard exists, falling speed shall be lawful, but any speeds in excess of such limits shall be prima facie evidence that the speed is not reasonable or prudent and that is unlawful, except that the speed limit within any municipality shall be a maximum limit and any speed in excess thereof shall be unlawful, subdivision 1, 30 miles per hour in an urban district. Let's assume for the sake of argument that it said, any speed in excess thereof shall be unlawful, 30 miles per hour in a school zone. Wouldn't that require the state to prove two elements? One, that the person was driving over 30 miles an hour, and two, that the person was driving in a school zone?
Yes, but I think, again, the definition, the school zone is likely going to be designated by signage, which the officer will testify to. I think.
But let's assume there's no signage there at all. Let's assume there's no signage whatsoever.
I think if the speed limit was consistent with statutorily consistent, the posted speed limit was statutorily consistent with the location, then I think the burden would be on the defendant to challenge that it was not a school zone.
Wouldn't it be the burden on the state to prove that the person was driving 30 miles an hour and that they were driving in a school zone? It seems really odd that the defendant would have to have the burden to prove when the state is the one that's charging somebody with driving over a speed limit in a particular area.
I think, though, the problem is that under that theory is we basically nullify the importance of signage on the roadways.
Okay, but just hear me out here for a second.
Yeah.
Let's assume the statute says you can't drive over 30 miles an hour in a school zone. And your person is driving, they see signs that say school zone, but there's no posted signage posted that says what the speed limit is. It is assumed that the person will not drive over 30 miles an hour. It is assumed that they know what the statute says, right?
Yes.
But who has the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the driver did in fact drive over 30 miles an hour and was in fact within a school zone? Isn't that the state's burden to prove both of those elements?
It would be.
Okay. Yes. Then how is that any different than this situation where the state would have to prove that the person is driving over 30 miles an hour? And here's really the key issue. Doesn't the state have to prove that they were driving in an urban district?
And again, I think the state, the whole scheme when looked at it and the whole statutory scheme is that the roadway authorities are placing signage at these appropriate areas.
But the signage doesn't matter. The signage goes to the element of the speed, the element of the location. It's like venue. In order to charge somebody for a particular, let's say a felony crime, one of the elements is venue. This crime occurred within the county of Ramsey County or Hennepin County or Itasca County. And if that element isn't met, then the state hasn't proved its case. Isn't this really, in essence, a venue element that the state has to prove that this offense occurred in an urban district? And that's the language in the statute, in an urban district.
Again, I don't believe when we really kind of dive deep into the statute that that was the expectation that that this statute as written is creating that type of burden of proof on placing that type of burden of proof on the state.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge Hooten.
Oh, are we required though? I mean, you keep saying if you read the whole scheme this is how you would interpret it. But are we also required to interpret statutes in such a way to give effect as to all of the statutes? And isn't that a canon of construction?
It is. But again, I think there is a presumption that the posted speed limit will be consistent with these areas.
And I understand, but that's a different. You're talking about the state's burden or duty to put signs up, but in looking at these statutes, I mean, I don't think there's any dispute if there had been a posted sign that had been testified to as part of this record that we wouldn't be here and on this appeal. Is that correct? So the issue here is there was no allegation that there was a posted sign in this area. There's nothing here to indicate that this charge was dependent upon a posted sign.
My argument would be that the posted sign is sufficient.
But that's not the charge that was brought. The charge that was brought is he was doing 30 miles an hour in an urban district.
Yes, but again, I think in all the statutes where a posted sign is required, it's where there's been alterations made to those set limits in 2A.
All right. Well, so, let me just go a step further because I'm trying to, figure out how do we give effect to all of the statute, and you're claiming that your interpretation there's an inconsistency, but couldn't we also read the statute, the entire statutory scheme, to say that if there's a posted sign, you have to obey that. If there isn't a posted sign, if you're in an urban district, the speed limit is 30 miles an hour. That doesn't sound like to me like an inconsistency. It sounds like the legislature was trying to make it clear what the speed limit would be in an urban district. Either there'd be a posted sign or if you're in an urban district, it's by law.
Yeah, and I agreed. I think in a footnote in my brief, I noted that if this would be a different case, yes, if there was no posted speed limit whatsoever and the state sought to enforce this. I think, and if the key is I think the key statutory interpretation question are the definitions of urban district, et cetera, an indispensable element that has to be proven by the state?
Would Manley control here?
Again, I think there's the risk of reading too deeply into that, because that was a case where, again, the state charged the defendant under subdivision 2A, speeding in an urban district, 30 mile an hour limit, but the posted speed limit was 40. And so the court said, if we're going to shift the charge from speeding in an urban district to speeding in violation of a sign, then the presumption of proof switches over to the defendant because they would have to prove that the sign was posted in error. I think if the posted speed limit had been 30 miles an hour and was consistent with the charge and with the locality, I think any potential to challenge the propriety of that would then rest on the defendant in that circumstance.
Would you charge it differently if there'd been, could this have just been charged as a violation of a posted sign?
Possibly, but the problem is that, again, I think it could be charged under 5B or 2A1. But the problem is that most of the statutes dealing with posted signage, again, are due to alterations from the speed limits set in subdivision 2. So the thing is again, and this is where kind of the second part of my argument, I'm sorry, I'm going over time.
Yes. And if you can briefly summarize your response to Judge Hooten's question, please.
Yeah, and this is where I think we go into the other part of my argument is that if we look at, obviously the legislature intended the state to be able to enforce speed limits. And if we go down the rabbit hole of saying that they have to prove these localities, it makes it really, really difficult to do that.
Can I follow up Judge Reyes on that? Because
yes, please.
I know you made a big point about that. And I'm looking at the definition of urban district. I mean, first of all, the legislature obviously thought that was important enough to define it. And it's the definition includes any city street or town road that's built up with structures devoted to business, industry, or dwelling houses situated at intervals of less than 100 feet for a distance of a quarter of a mile or more. And I know you say, oh, that's going to be, it's going to put this really hard burden on the state and it'll be so hard to prove. And I mean, what about the argument of the appellant here that all you got to do is show a picture? And also, couldn't the officer just testify if he's, you know, if he's lived there in this town and he's employed by the town or whatever? I mean, he should be able to testify to this. Why is this so unduly burdensome?
Maybe, but I mean, what if Mr. Cheetah is kind of saying, well, I would accept this evidence, but what happens when you have the defendant who starts questioning the officer, you know, did you measure the buildings? Can you catalog what type of buildings are in the area? I mean, is that proper for an officer to do? Do I need a city planner to do that? Same thing too, if we're going to say really that we don't trust roadway signs, I mean, think of someone being stopped on the interstate. I mean, how do you establish, you know, how does a trooper establish that the area was an interstate? I mean, normally he's probably going to say, I know it was an interstate because there was a sign there telling me that it was an interstate. I think just a final comment. I mean, I do think the sort of
defect. And briefly, counsel, we are running well over
time.
Yeah,
I think there is maybe a defect in the statute in that there's two audiences, right? There's one, the prosecutors who are enforcing it, and then there's also the Department of Transportation or the local roadway authorities who are putting these things into action and placing the appropriate signage. And I can't believe that the legislature wanted, you know, enforcement of this to be by, you know, with the specificity that the Department of Transportation would be, you know, putting signage up on the roadways. Obviously, I think a much more simple scheme needs to apply.
Thank you, counsel. And we went over and I did want to make sure that you had time to answer Judge Hooten's questions.
Thank you.
Counsel for appellant, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
You're muted.
I apologize. I would be brief on my rebuttal and just note that, you know, we actually have kind of a hypothetical that's a real situation in the statute, and that is 10 miles per hour in alleyways. So I think that is analogous to the school zone hypothetical. The state, I think, would ask this court to define the rule here that it wouldn't have to prove that it's an alley either. The police officer wouldn't have to testify it's an alley. Is that easier to prove and therefore should be an element, whereas urban district in the very same subdivision should not be an element the state has to prove? I would say no. And of course, the entire statute can be read without inconsistencies. And we see that we see this in the other cases that appellants cited. Yes, they're from other states, but they involved areas where there were also posted signs for 30 miles an hour. In the Illinois case, in the Texas case, those were insufficient for a conviction because the state has a burden of proof when it charges a particular statute like it did in this case involving urban district. The state, again, has the opportunity to pursue signs and charge other subdivisions, and it would have made it a lot easier for the state in this case. You know, whether there would have been a conviction or not, I don't know. But I do know that the state failed, or do believe the state failed in its burden of proof here. The statute can be read as a whole. It's a plain language interpretation. And we can't remove urban district when the charge is based in this particular provision. Thank you very much. We're asking for the court to reverse the conviction as a result of insufficiency of evidence.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your oral arguments and your briefing on this matter. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory timeframe. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.